You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It's also a pleasure to be joined here in the studio today by Alex Beck, who is the Workforce and Education Program Manager with the Brattleboro Development and Credit Corporation, kind of the counterpart to the Bennington County Regional Commission, which we're probably sort of more familiar with. But the BDCC operates over in Windham County in the towns of Reedsboro, Searsburg, Weston, and Windhall, and is one of the 12 certified Vermont Regional Development Corporations. Alex, pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making that long drive over from Brattleboro. Also a great pleasure to welcome back Jonathan Cooper, who is the Bennington County Regional Commission's Economic Development Specialist. And the two of them are here today to talk about an issue that has been getting a lot more attention lately, and that's about Vermont's population, demographics, and a proposal to do something about that through an immigration approach. The BDCC and the BCRC, I'll get those acronyms straight one of these days, have partnered up with a Bellows Falls-based group known as the Community Asylum Seeker Project to explore bringing more Vermont, bringing more new Vermonters to the state through immigration. They have secured a $15,000 grant from the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston to explore that, which might lead on to a larger $300,000 grant to get this process rolling. So these two gentlemen here today to tell us a little bit more about that, and very timely subject. Alex, let's have you get us started here. What was the genesis point of this idea for the grant application? How did it all begin?
Sure. So the BDCC and CEVEDS and our counterparts mm-hmm. in Bennington County have long identified population demographics as a major issue that our economy and communities are facing. And that is something that, as the workforce program manager at the BDCC, you know, every day that's what I wake up thinking about. And as do, you know, our executive director and our other folks. And when we heard about this Working Communities Challenge, which is the name of the program from the Boston Fed, we knew we wanted to do something around making system-wide change with our population demographics. And there were eight groups in Vermont that were awarded this $15,000 grant. But what really jump-started it was meeting CASP, the Community Asylum Seekers Project. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, you know, we've had this priority of growing our population and being a more welcoming place for immigration. And then learn that there were folks in our backyards in Bellows Falls doing this work. And so we went to them and said, can this grow? You know, is there something that you can envision taking what you've learned and expanding it to, you know, the entirety of southern Vermont? You know, is this a good enough idea for this challenge? And so now we have this next 6 months to plan what comes next.
And what kind of scale are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, dozens of people, hundreds of people? What roughly, if it all were to work out, how many new Vermonters would you like to see us welcoming, let's say, over the course of a year?
Yeah, so for this to succeed, really, we need to make sure the existing resources in place and the system in place that's supporting Vermonters now is welcoming and accessible to everyone. And from that, we expect, you know, legal immigration from folks who are outside of the country, but also in-migration of more diverse populations to flow from that. We have very basic numbers. They're not anything that we're particularly holding ourselves accountable to just yet this early in the game. But if we could welcome 1,000, you know, new immigrants, new Vermonters over the next 10 years throughout the entirety of southern Vermont, that would be a success for us. Again, that number is less important for this project than the work with the folks, you know, who are doing that, making it accessible to all.
And just so we're clear, we are talking about, you know, legally documented immigrants. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about folks who came in through some kind of back door, or they don't really have all their credentials in place. They've been vetted. Mm-hmm. They've been screened. All of that we've been hearing so much about in the last few years. Mm-hmm. That sounds really like an interesting approach. And Jonathan, I'm sure from your standpoint, with economic development and workforce questions, I know that it's been a big topic of conversation in recent years. Is this sounds like a good approach to kind of try and solve some of those workforce issues we've heard so much about?
It does. As we referred to in previous programming, you know, the Southern Vermont's Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy was developed, implemented, and was recently federally approved to sort of guide growth and other economic development strategies for the next 5 years. The number one objective was to grow our population, to know that we need more people. Coming into the 2020 census year, we know that we're looking at a 4% population decline in southern Vermont, and that is pretty substantial. You know, the state issued some population projections in 2013, and they thought that in the worst case scenario, southern Vermont would lose 4% of its population by 2030. So we're soberingly ahead of the curve, and we know that economic activity follows people. Where you are able to grow your population, you'll be able to grow your economy, you'll be able to bring in some workforce needs, satisfy some workforce needs. And as Alex said, there's sort of a knock-on effect that when you, if we're targeting, say, focusing on non-native-born, you know, populations, sort of growing that a little bit, and there's about 2,500 people in Southern Vermont right now who weren't born in the U.S. So we're looking at growing that a little bit. There's that knock-on effect that we'll see some additional people moving to the area as well, as Southern Vermont comes to reflect more fully sort of maybe the national experience, et cetera. That's a, so we see this as really checking a lot of the boxes, population itself, but also civic infrastructure, social infrastructure. We see that we're bringing, by bringing new faces to this region, we have new opportunities, and we're all quite excited about that.
You know, I sometimes it occurs to me that, you know, some people don't, you know, they hear about population being stagnant or declining 4% or so, like you're just mentioning. And a lot of people go, well, hey, so what? You know, it's a cycle. It goes up and down. You know, Vermont's population has peaked and fallen over the last 200 or however many years it's been a state. What's the big deal? Are we seeing the effects of that demographic, the aging population, really starting to bite now compared to, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago? Or is it still kind of like, hey, you know, we can muddle through?
No, you raise a very good point. So there's really two things that are happening at the same time. One is that our sort of profile is aging. So we have an older population relative to Vermont at large and the United States in general. But it's also, that's being driven by the people that we're losing. The people that are leaving Southern Vermont are in that 25 to 54 range, which is like the prime working age. That's where you have a lot of talent. That's where you have a lot of experience. You have emerging professionals. So we're losing those individuals and their children. And that's something that when you lose, can you imagine a lively town without children in it? And these are really important elements, building blocks of our society, of our town fabric. So it's hitting our workforce elements pretty hard, but it's also kind of creeping into civic life and public life as we see fewer children in our playgrounds. And this has a lot to do with the allocation of resources, you know, what are priorities, areas for the state to consider funding, for the utilization of federal funds, that when our profile skews to slightly older with a hollowing out of our working sort of age professionals and their children, we have a top-heavy sort of pyramid that is ultimately, like any top-heavy pyramid would be, fairly unstable.
Are we much different from any other rural state around the country where it sounds like what I keep on hearing is that, you know, migration is going from rural states to more urban areas. I mean, we're not alone in this process, and I imagine other states are probably thinking, we need to get our share of new blood too, and immigrants or whatever.
Yeah, I think we're seeing this issue, you know, permeate all of rural America. But unfortunately, you know, Vermont, what sets us apart uniquely as a rural state, and mostly in New England, is that what we don't have is significant in migration and of particularly non-white population demographics, but just in general in migration and our fertility rates. Yeah. And so I think that's something where, you know, yes, all of rural America may be losing folks who look like Jonathan and I, but many other communities have found ways to welcome different folks in. When you think of rural communities that have an economic boom, think of rural places that find natural gas as a good example. The influx of people to these rural areas around economic opportunity is incredible. And Vermont has job openings, high wage, good, well paying jobs. You know, they're not in natural gas, which I think we all are actually really happy about. But we have this opportunity here. What we don't have is the inflow of folks who are rising to meet this opportunity.
Has this sort of approach been tried elsewhere? Or because I'm thinking, you know, we've heard a lot about the remote worker program the state has been running for a couple of years now, and the stay-to-stay program. There have been other incentives offered to try and attract more people. Do you think that this is going to be something we could build on top of those other initiatives, would we be able to do that without some kind of program that's set up to attract immigrants?
You know, I think we can do everything we can to make Vermont a more welcoming place for everyone. You know, more often than not, resources and funding is allocated based on who that person might be or what careers they're looking to pursue. You know, the remote worker program versus the relocation program is based on what you're trying to do. Regardless of what that program is targeting, Vermont still needs to be a welcoming place for everyone. And I think that's kind of where we think all ships will rise with that tide, you know, is what we're really hoping for.
As you might imagine, when we're talking about people born outside of the United States, a lot of the programming that you're describing, the authority there lies with the federal government. It is not necessarily something that can easily be, we can get our thumb on the scales. The things that we can control are the things that sort of, I think Alex has been talking about, and that we do have some resources for new Vermonters. The thought is then, you know, how to make sure that that's accessible to all. What are the barriers to uptake, and how can we resolve them in the near term? I think that's in the some of the states' incentives, usually looking at financial incentives, and that's something that we've seen Vermont trying out, but other states are now sort of picking that up as they see that this is sort of, if anything, it creates free publicity for your state, and that's always a good thing. And I think that we'll be sort of thinking through some of these options or permutations throughout the planning process, but it seems that as we've sort of considered this, what we're looking to accomplish is make Vermont, and Southern Vermont in particular, a more attractive place. People who are outside the United States and are already considering, you know, moving to the United States for work, for economic opportunity. And so we're really pleased to build on that.
So when I first heard of this, my mind immediately flashed back to the situation that happened in Rutland a few years ago when 100 Syrian refugees were going to be brought to the town. And it seemed like such a win-win situation. I mean, here you take these poor folks who've been caught in the middle of a civil war. Many of them middle-class professionals, doctors, lawyers, hardworking people, families. And you bring it to a town like Rutland that had been losing population and, in theory, had the housing space and the capacity in their economy to absorb these people fairly quickly and get them working and being productive members of the community. And, well, as we all remember, that caused a bit of an uproar in Rutland. And I know there are other factors in play, and we can talk about those. But Does that sort of serve as like sort of a cautionary tale, or kind of makes you go, we've got to really make sure we play this correctly here to avoid a replay of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are some similarities. The folks that CASP is working with, whom, you know, that's really what we're modeling this system off of, is the success they've had, is with affirmative asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. So these are folks who have been granted legal asylum. It's a humanitarian based status, and similar to a refugee, but they've been vetted similarly to that. And so, in terms of the who is we're hoping to welcome, at least at first, there's a lot of similarities there. What's different is the how we're doing it, which makes it which is my understanding is one of the challenges that Rutland struggled with. In Rutland, they were opening a new resettlement office, which is a formal state office that receives federal funding to operate. And it was a top-down model of trying this. And so that was one of the major complaints about that process. This work is based out of our grassroots SEDS, something that all community members have been participating in for years now.
Yes.
And the work being done is being funded through the Boston Federal Reserve. So we're not, using taxpayer dollars just yet. And then lastly, it's really how CASP has worked, and my experience so far leading this project. I have already had folks from Bennington County, volunteers, email me saying, what can I do to help? And I've had to say, pump the brakes, we're not quite there yet. But absolutely, this is it's called the working communities. It's not one organization picking and choosing. And so I think that's a really different process that we're taking that I think will open up more input from the community, and it will be a much more community-driven process. And I'm certain we can address any concerns.
It does give us the chance to consider what becoming a new Vermonter is like from different perspectives, from the perspectives of people who have been lifelong residents of the region, from the perspective of people who, like Alex or like me, maybe moved here as an adult for work or for education, and then from the perspectives of those who maybe are coming from farther afield. It's also, at the same time, a lesson in civics, a prolonged sort of long look, a deep dive into the process by which people become Americans or take on the mantle of citizenship. And that's ultimately a very rewarding thing. We found that with asylum seekers and refugees, this is the most thoroughly vetted group of people this side of Fort Knox in the Pentagon. I mean, it's remarkable to look at the interviews, the background checks through Department of Homeland Security, the Department of State, Department of Defense, FBI, CIA. It is a lengthy process that includes interactions with databases that over 50 countries sort of are contributing to. So it's really remarkable in some instances to learn about these processes, the long roads that some people walk to have the opportunity to be Vermonters, which is also sometimes can be a very moving thing to learn more about. And so it'll be how this process takes shape after the 6 months we have yet to see, but I think we'll be learning a lot more from our partners at the Federal Reserve Bank and some of the program funders that have been supporting this along the way, and local partners that have been a part of this process. And it's very exciting to hear the early returns that there's even some interest that you're getting throughout Southern Vermont, knowing that, well, when things are getting sugaring out, like, let me know. We want to hear, we want to help get our shoulders behind the wheel, which is an encouraging way to begin.
Yeah.
How do you identify these people who are going to be among these 1,000 or so folks that hopefully, or if everything works out? I mean, do you get a list of names from the State Department or somewhere, or where do they come from?
So this will be the first of many times I might say this, where we're very much in the beginning phase of this, and we rely are relying really on the CASP based out of Bellows Falls and what their model is to start this process.
Okay.
And what they do and what often happens at our southern border is folks may be granted asylum in the United States. They've been vetted and approved for asylum, but they need a sponsor to leave the border. So whether they are in a detention situation or in a camp or are just waiting, you know, in something similar. They need a sponsor. That person needs to go through a legal process. They need someone willing to say, this person will live with me. Here are the employees. You know, we have an economy that can support employment. And then there is the rest of that individual's immigration process to transition from an asylee to whatever's next. And that could be a visa holder. It could be a green card holder. That's something that we're really interested in exploring further. The most important thing is where we're starting is for folks who have already been granted asylum. So they're already in the United States. And the United States government has said these folks are it's called affirmative asylum. And it's that they are allowed to stay here as their asylum case is fully processed and they're seeking this humanitarian support.
So what then will be sort of the next steps then in all of this? You're hoping to leverage this $15,000 grant into a larger bucket of funds to help move this forward. How long of a time frame are we talking about with that?
So that's a 6-month trainings application process that I'm really excited to start. We have our first big meeting in 2 weeks. All of the 8 groups who have gotten this grant are meeting in Montpelier. The Boston Fed is coming in, and they're saying, here's the vision of how we think you should engage your community, and here's what we're going to want to see at the end of this, you know, in June when we submit a grant. Here's a structure and process we want you to do, but what's in that application? You know, it's coming from you, your core team, and your community members. And so, again, I'll say we're very much in the beginning, but this initial seed funding is to make sure that folks like CASP, who are mostly volunteer organization, you know, Jonathan and I driving up and down the state, there's funding available so that even if we do all of this work and we don't get that $300,000 3-year grant, we're not at a loss in terms of local capacity. You know, we didn't put in all that hard work for nothing. But also we have a plan that we could decide to pursue this without the $300,000. But what that plan is, we need to engage our community members and all of our core partners, which is starting now.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's been really remarkable about this process is that in the same way that Alex was referring to earlier, like trying to avoid any sort of top-down implementation, the Working Communities Challenge itself has been tailored from what it originally started out in southern New England for some of these cities that by Vermont standards would be huge megalopolies, but it's been tailored with work from the Agency of Commerce Community Development to be a more at our scale. And the Vermont Community Foundation has had a leading role here as well, so that we're not simply looking at some ideas from Boston or from away, that this is something that has organizations that have a deep institutional knowledge of Vermont communities, local control, how these conversations need to take shape. And we're really glad that their presence here is sort of helping us maintain our connection to the communities that we serve, that we were empowered to serve, or that's baked into our mission.
You know, one thing, you know, it's frustrating from the grant writer perspective, but the Boston Fed hasn't shared the application with us yet because the entire way they've said the process is more important than the product because some folks, they get the grant and they write it all before they have the meetings and they say, here's how everything's going to go. Absolutely. You know, let's create the budget before we talk with what we're, you know, all the stakeholders. There isn't even the opportunity to do that. And so this process is really where, you know, they've told us that don't worry, after, you know, these 6 months, you'll have enough meetings, you'll have an application. And so we're trusting that process, and we're excited to see how it plays out, because that's when that person from Bennington who emailed me to volunteer, I'm going to, you know, call her back up and say, now's the time, you know, help us with the invitation to your community members of how to engage.
It's really remarkable. In that approach is sort of reinforces the notion that this is about systems change. This isn't about to the most grant writing proficient go the spoils. This is about where the ideas are, where the opportunities opportunities to make a really big impact are. I think it was of interest to that initial screening of applicants that yielded the eight that will be meeting in Montpelier later on, that seeing something small in CASP up in Bellows Falls, that, oh, could this scale up and what could the impacts be there? So we're, you know, Alex and the team are raising some really, really important questions and sort of indicating a path forward. And it's been great and really heartening to see that the Working Communities Challenge team has said, there's more here. Let's go find out about that.
So the reaction so far from the communities or the community members you've spoken to was like, it's been receptive. It's not like we're going, not sure if we want people to aren't from Vermont to move here. Yeah, it's basically been pretty positive so far.
Yeah. I think there's always going to be folks who are going to say, you know, what are you doing for Vermonters who are here already? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is, we are strengthening our systems that are here for Vermonters already. You know, the question isn't how do we create new opportunities, new programs, special opportunities for these folks. It's how can we make sure that the same public transportation that everyone has access to now, how do we make that more accessible to everyone, to include a new population? So that doesn't mean there's going to be less bus stops, for the folks who are already here. It means which ones do we add? You know, is there a time shift that works better for working folks? You know, if we skew some of our populations to now we have a group of folks going to work at one of our local employers who all live in one area, all of a sudden that could be a new bus stop, and folks from the community who normally wouldn't have done that might have access to that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it'll be fascinating to watch how this plays out, and certainly addresses a real critical need, as you both have spoken to, that we need to get more folks here to kind of fill those spots in the rescue squad and the fire department and all the other private sector posts that sounds like are want people but just can't find the right people.
Very much. And kids in our schools and volunteers for our nonprofits, you know, you name it.
Yeah. Well, good luck. And hopefully we'll have you both back here in a few months and give us the follow-up.
With good news, I hope. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank Jonathan Cooper and Alex Beck for being with us today and telling us about this really interesting situation here that we will no doubt learn more about as we go forward. And also, thank you for being with us today. I hope you found the conversation interesting and informative, and we'll see you again the next time. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.